I'm just going to interrupt you for a minute. I want to add a little more about silk now that you've had the chance to put your hands on it for a couple of minutes, okay? Using silk with RW filter to grab data, it does take a little getting used to, but I hope you're starting to see, I hope you have seen, wow, I can get data very fast. And it is super high level, but it can drive your analysis down to other aspects or identify which packets you care about. And we get into carving packets out in the next section. But it's not unusual to want to chain together multiple RW filter commands. So I just want to show you a little bit about how that would work. So for mine, I'm going to say that I'm going to grab packets out of all my sensors. And I'm going to start with, let's do flags initial equal to sins. So I'm looking for sins. And I'm also looking for flags initial equal to synac. So I'm looking for all normal connections. That's what I'm looking for. I'm going to tell that to pass standard out through RW cut fields. Let's do source IP, source port, destination IP, destination port, and I'll do, now this part's one of those other, oh wait a minute, is it flags initial? I think it is. But here it's initial flags. So it's another one of those, why can't they be consistent? So it's a little backwards, okay. But we are successfully finding sins in synax. We can see all of the connections that were established. Let me quit out of that. I'm going to move up to the top. Let's change that. I'm now looking for long connections. A long connection for me, I could look at the duration. That would tell me the duration over that hour. But I want to know if this is something that persisted from a previous hour. That's where my mind is right now. So instead of sending the things that match to standard out, I'm going to send the things that fail to standard out. Because now I'm seeing the things that are left over. Now along the way, already you can tell right up top there's something not right about my output. What's not right about my output? Think about what you're seeing. That byte, so it offset 2, so inside of the header, right, and there's another byte over here. It's looking at this byte here, and it's saying that in that byte, sorry, there's a little small there. So this is 1s, 2s, 4s, 8s, 16s, 32, 64s. What's the last one? 128s. And that 128, that's where the Q slash R is. If it's cleared, if that's zero, then it's a query. That bit is worth 128. What is absolutely the biggest number that you can count to using the other 7 bits? 127. Because just like in base 10, right? If I give you two places, what is absolutely the biggest number you can come up with? 99. The next number is 100. The next place is 100. So here, 128. So we're taking advantage of that fact and saying, well, if it's less than 128, that would mean that that value is cleared. And I could go the other way if I want to know if it's a response, if it's greater than 128. So I could just flip that around. So we're cheating a little. We're not actually doing the bit mask. You can do bit masking here too. We can now run that here and we find, oh, and the is data at is saying, and then inside of the data payload, is there data sitting at this offset? Yeah.
Would you be able to write a rule that looks for entropy in the domain request?
No. Yeah. I could not write a rule in Snort to find entropy in the request. I could write a Snort plugin. So now you're back in the C and C++ world. But I could do that using something like Bro. Yeah. And in fact, we'll return to that because when we look at Tor, that's exactly how Bro is approaching the problem. This rule is not optimal because it uses the pattern matcher after it deals with the header first, and there's no content pattern in here. So this is not really an optimized rule. But there's not a lot I can do because I can't predict what the data is going to be that's going to be inside of this. How about with Bro? With Pro, now, all right, now yesterday you might have felt like, wow, that Pro thing is really complicated. But I'll tell you what, after looking at the bike test and snort, I think this looks pretty easy. What does that mean? The size of it, the magnitude of it. If the query is bigger than 100, tell me. That's a lot easier, right? And we're grabbing it based on DNS requests because we're subscribing to that event. So that turns out to be a really straightforward way to find that problem. Could I find it with Silk? Yes, because of the nature of the communication. Now, we haven't missed anything over here, okay? It wasn't a misprint. There's nothing there. Notice I'm only asking for field 10. Field 10 is the duration. So we're just looking at DNS traffic, just regular DNS traffic on port 53, and we're looking at durations. Look at the durations. They are small. That's normal for DNS. Data-driven, leading to threat analysis. We look at data and we say, I wonder what DNS looks like. Oh, duration, so it's really, you know what? Would it ever be interesting to me if I had a duration that was greater than, well, what's the longest it could take to resolve something? Let's say 10 seconds. And now I find, hey, there was a 52-second and a 34-second DNS connection. That's highly unusual. If I know about DNSCAT, I look at that and say, that looks like DNSCAT. If you don't know about DNSCAT, could creating a simple thing that looks for that as an anomaly in your data be a way to identify that there's something unusual happening? Why would DNS take so long? Let me go look into that. Does that make sense? So it becomes the data-driven thing that leads you to finding the unusual stuff in your data. Another command and control, and it doesn't have to be command and control, is Tor, the Onion Router. The Onion Router is cool. It was originally funded by the Naval Research Lab. The Navy and a bunch of other government agencies own a variety of these exit nodes. There are a lot of volunteers who own a lot of exit nodes. The Russian Business Network, RBN, owns a large number of exit nodes. Russian Business Network, does anyone know what that is? Who that is? What? Very close. So it's not FSB. It's not FSB, but they do work for the FSB from time to time. Yeah, but they wouldn't say agency. The Russian Business Network is Russian organized crime, which has a very tight relationship with the FSB. They scratch each other's backs. Why would Russian organized crime want to own a large number of Tor routers? Well, it's not... What's that? No, go. It is. I use Tor to get to the dark web. That's one. But I also use Tor to go through the dark web to get to the internet so people on the other end don't know who I am. I'm hiding my activity. What happens if I have a large monitoring network and I own a lot of exit nodes? I can find the exit nodes and I can also probably see the people who are talking to who are going into the network. Could I, with some behavioral analysis, and I'm not asking to do this on like, I want to know everybody, but if there is a person of interest and I'm monitoring them already and I see they're using Tor, do I have the potential that if I can monitor enough Tor nodes, I can actually identify their activity and correlate it? That attribution is very interesting for law enforcement. Russian Business Network is also interested for identity theft and other credential stealing, and they're interested because for the FSB. Now, this is not limited to Russian intelligence. I know that everyone here was shocked and appalled to find out that the U.S. government is spying on people, right? You couldn't believe it. And I know that when Trump said in an interview, you know, well, the Russians, they're killing people, and Trump's like, yeah, well, our hands aren't clean. or whatever he said, effectively saying, well, we've toppled governments and assassinated people too. People are like, oh. But were you really surprised? Not really surprised. Okay, so Russian Business Network, we can point at them. We know a lot about it. Connected to the FSB. In espionage, one of the things you strive to do is gather intelligence about the people who already have information in your target. If you gather information about them that is embarrassing or that can be leveraged against them, now you have a way to activate them as an asset. So why would the FSB be interested in Tor? Not only to find dissidents within Russia, they're very active in finding dissidents, and their terrorism, their anti-extremist legislation is very interesting. They can pretty much arrest you for anything and call it extremism. But it creates a way to find foreign assets. Very interesting. In the United States, I would say to you, if you're going to use Tor, don't do it from your house. Because it has been reported, there's no attribution for this, but there are claims that insiders have told some, never publicly disclosed, not in any known disclosure to date, that simply going and downloading Tor will get your IP address flagged for additional monitoring. So if you're using it from your house, you are saying, hi, I'm doing things I don't want you to see. And that's just asking for monitoring. So if you're going to use Tor, where should you do it? Starbucks. And what should you do it from? What? Well, maybe from a virtual machine, or how about a throwaway laptop that the only thing I do with it is Tor? That would be the best thing to do.
I tried Tor once a couple of years ago, and Hulu still thinks I'm a relay and won't let me use their service.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, you will be popular. Yes. Yeah. All right, so Tor. It usually is going to be over port 443. It leverages TLS. It turns out it is exceptionally easy to identify Tor data. Normally, this is what your certificates will look like. If you are using Tor, you will find issuers that look like that. What are that? What are those? Random. Just junk. So it's going to be loads of self-signed certs that are just random data. Can I detect that? Absolutely. So can I find, what's the word you used? Entropy in the, yes. So we've got a bro script here that does exactly that for detecting Tor. So you could leverage, you could just borrow that, steal that code, and yeah, it's just doing entropy detection to report possible weird certificates. How can I prevent command and control in my network? It's really the basics. What do I need? What do I need? Most organizations, if you sit down and you really look at it, and you say, you can have absolutely any network communication you need to conduct business. And then you sit that down and you say, you give me the business case, we will permit that port through. For almost all networks, not an ISP, but for almost all business networks, 10 protocols or fewer, just as a rule of thumb. For most organizations, we get to about 6, and then we're like pulling protocols just out of the air. Because like, well, maybe someone someday will need, because if you need World of Warcraft for business, I will open it up. But if you can't give a business case and get some manager to sign that, I'm not going to let it through. If I don't let ports through, it is much more difficult to get command and control through. Though 443 is going to be open, and in our case, 53 is open too, right? Two of the command and controls we've had here. To detect these things, it then comes down to either getting rule updates that happen to have a signature that can find an alert on it, or better, moving toward data-driven analysis, where I am coming to know my network, know who talks to who, know what the profiles look like, and when I now see something that is out of profile, that becomes interesting to me. The consoles that I keep open on my desk, they are showing me things that are interesting to me. Long connections, large byte counts, and then odd connections. So whitelisting connections that I know should happen, and if there's any other thing that happens, that's going to light up as an interesting thing, and then chasing that down. That helps a lot in finding these things. The last thing we want to talk about is the challenge of dealing with large PCAP files.